You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. With a stick in the arm yesterday, ER nurse Kim Taylor at Kaiser in East Hollywood became one of the first Angelenos to get vaccinated against COVID-19 as part of the national rollout that's underway.
What I want you guys to know is that help is on the way. Today's just the first step. Soon more vaccines will be distributed to the frontline workers and our most vulnerable populations. I also want people to know that the vaccine is safe, and when it's made widely available, I encourage everyone to take it so that we can get rid of this pandemic and get back to normal life.
But even as advocates for different industries lobby for priority access to the vaccine, teachers, journalists, Uber drivers, they all want a good spot in line, there are some who are not so excited. A recent study from the COVID Collaborative, that's a coalition of medical experts, economists, and health educators, found that only 34% of Latino Americans think the vaccine is safe. When asked about whether they trust in the effectiveness of the vaccine, only 40% said yes. Those numbers are even lower for Black Americans. Only 18% of Black folks trust in how well a vaccine would work. KCRW's Danielle Chiriguayo talked with Angelenos who were skeptical about the COVID-19 vaccine, and she filed this report.
Martin Duran wants to make one thing clear. He is not an anti-vaxxer. And he's very much a believer in COVID-19 and the real impact of the novel virus.
We had a very sort of like diligent approach to quarantining and making sure that we were following all the right steps and washing our hands and wearing a mask and social distancing. You know, the first 3 months, we left the house once on Sunday mornings to go to a supermarket when they opened.
Nowadays, the debate over what he and his wife are watching on a Friday night is as loose and as crazy as they get. That's because
my wife was diagnosed with cancer last year, and she completed her treatment about a month prior to the quarantine.
His wife's immune system is weak, and she's more at risk for catching any kind of infection. Martin, who lives in Silver Lake, knows that a vaccine is the solution to bringing life back to normal during the pandemic. And yet, he is one of the thousands of Californians who find themselves wary of taking a COVID-19 vaccine. He feels like he doesn't have enough information about what he's putting in his body.
I think that's the big thing. Like, what are the side effects? What is this going to do to me long term? Is there something that I need to worry about? For a virus that attacks your respiratory system, you know, when it gets you, it feels like you're suffocating to death. I would imagine this vaccine is extremely potent and strong. You know, it's definitely not a vitamin C tablet for sure. So what is it? What's in it?
Martin says part of the hesitation he and other Latinos feel stems from mistrust in health and in government systems.
I'm thinking about aunts and uncles and grandmothers like at this very moment. And it's just like, I can see it. I can hear them saying, ¿Qué es eso? Like, I don't know, brujería or something, you know, like, I think people are just naturally cynical and concerned. You know, you have to like convince us first before we buy in. Maybe it's that. Maybe it's those communities need to be thoroughly convinced. We need some proof.
He says that despite being a community that's so staunchly religious, it's not so easy to have faith.
I think a lot of people are like, when it comes to their health, they're like, no, thank you. You know, maybe when it comes to religion, I'll have blind faith. But when it comes to my health, I need to be a little more cautious. Maybe that's it.
Eventually, Martin says he can see himself taking the vaccine, but that's going to take some time.
I have my reservations. I have a very sort of like women and children first mentality when it comes to the vaccine. Like, you know, if people are willing to take it, I really, my hat goes off to them. I commend them I hate to say it, for being a bit of a guinea pig.
For Martin and others, being one of the first to get the vaccine isn't any great prize. It's terrifying. What if the fast tracking of the vaccine means there's terrible side effects that don't manifest until later on down the road? Wouldn't it just be better to wait it out? It's that idea of being a guinea pig that weighs in the mind of James Downing, a Black LA native. He's concerned the group's public health officials might push to get the shot first are actually those people we value the least.
We need the vaccine. We want it out as quickly as possible, but we don't know the risks or the dangers of it. What demographic is disposable in our mind? That's who we'll target first.
Jeans is worried by calls to get communities that have been hardest hit by COVID-19 vaccinated first, which in LA are typically Black and Latino neighborhoods.
And I'm like, why? You guys don't care when we're getting shot in the street. You get upset when we say Black Lives Matter. But now all of a sudden you want to give this unknown vaccine to the Black kids first? That was the first thing that really turned me to question the vaccine.
Like Martin, James is no anti-vaxxer. While fringe theories circulate online, like the vaccine being a ploy for Bill Gates to track you, among others, that's not James's fear. He's up to date on his own shots, as well as his wife and his 11-year-old daughter.
Normally, I trust the doctors. I'm not an expert on medicine. So, you know, when the doctors say that she should get these shots, she gets those shots. That's kind of how I've always been, without fear of, the government's out to get us or anything like that.
James says eventually he'll be willing to take the vaccine, but history gives him pause. He references the so-called father of gynecology, J. Marion Sims, who operated on enslaved Black women without anesthesia. And then there's Tuskegee, where nearly 400 Black men with syphilis thought they were being treated, but instead found themselves part of a U.S. Public Health Service's study, tracking what happens when the human body comes down with a venereal disease.
Historically, our government's done some pretty vile things. I mean, most people know about Tuskegee, but there's others as well, where they were doing testing on Native Americans, you know, the intern camps and with the Japanese Americans. So there's a long list of things that the government has done to its own people.
Neither James nor Martin work in the healthcare system, but even those who work in public health have their concerns. It drives Cheryl Racinos crazy. She's a Lancaster-based physician who's fought hard on the pandemic front lines since the very beginning. Cheryl says vaccine skepticism is all around her at the hospital where she works.
Hearing it from hospital colleagues, it's frustrating because they've been right there with me and they've seen the same gravity of, you know, the number of patients being admitted, the number of sick patients being admitted, you know, patients coming in and not leaving the hospital because they don't survive. And to sit next to them and hear them say, well, I'm fine. I don't need to get the vaccine. Everybody else can get it. I don't need it. I don't trust vaccines. I'll get it 6 months later after everyone else.
Back in July, she and her husband both signed up for the Pfizer vaccine study. Cheryl's not absolutely sure whether she got the vaccine, but she says after she got the shot, her fingers got tingly, she felt tired, and her arm felt sore, similar to what happens after getting a flu shot. Afterwards, she told her coworkers she took part in the Pfizer study. She wanted to lead by example, showing her coworkers there's nothing to be afraid of. And now, Cheryl says they're more open to getting it.
My colleagues were scared because when they found out I enrolled in the trial, they thought I was taking silly risks. But now everyone sees me and they're like, you got that Pfizer vaccine, didn't you? Like, you're the smart one. And so everybody's really excited now, but they were really nervous before. So I'm glad that I participated because I've already seen just a change within the doctors I work with and the nurses that I work with. A lot of them are very eager to get their vaccine now.
Her advice to vaccine skeptics?
Getting a vaccine, it may be scary, but getting COVID is so much scarier. I've never seen anything like this virus. It literally takes your breath away and leaves you gasping for air that you can't find. No matter how much oxygen we're throwing at patients, it's not enough. We need you to trust it because we need it so that we don't die and our families don't die. And we need you to stop getting sick so that we're not overwhelmed by the number of patients we're trying to take care of.
She says those in charge of distributing the vaccine will need to focus on finding solutions that fit all people and their perspectives. For KCRW, I'm Danielle Chiriguayo.
So yeah, the first doses of a COVID vaccine have finally arrived in Los Angeles, and there's been a lot of talk about who should get them first, and of course the fear that some people have of getting vaccinated at all. Well, one of the folks who's been helping to make the rules for vaccine distribution is Dr. Oliver Brooks. He's co-chair of California's Vaccine Drafting Guidelines Work Group, and he's also the chief medical officer over at Watts Healthcare. Dr. Brooks, nice to have you back on.
Yeah, good to be back on the air with you, too.
the first shipments of vaccines will be given to frontline healthcare workers. It's already happened. Other healthcare workers are next in line. But from what we just heard, even some healthcare workers are wringing their hands and saying, well, maybe I'll wait a bit to see if it's safe. I mean, do you have workers at Watts who are hesitant to get vaccinated?
I'd say that I've had conversations with people everywhere, healthcare workers and not, that do have some hesitation. Yes, healthcare workers are human just like everyone else.
Well, those human patients who are hesitant about the vaccine, we know there are a lot of folks who are. We just heard numbers from one poll that found only just about a third of Latinos trust the vaccine to be safe, and only 14% of Black Americans. That's a national poll, but those numbers must give you pause. What are you telling patients to try to overcome that kind of a, I mean, my gosh, what a barrier that is?
Well, the approach that I take, which has been studied and is a reasonable approach, is first and foremost, acknowledge their concerns. Don't just blow them off and say, what are you doing? You know, this vaccine is safe and effective, you need to get it. Have to understand where people are coming from. There is a mistrust of the medical community and in the African-American community. There's some grounds for that. I mean, slaves were experimented upon. They were sold for experimentation. In the turn of the 20th century, there was sterilization of African-American women. There's the infamous Tuskegee study where 600 Black men were allowed to have syphilis progress to see what the complications were. So, I mean, it's not like this is coming from nowhere. However, I have not known any, first of all, this is what I also tell them, I've known no bias or concern as it relates to experimentation or issue with any vaccine. The second thing I do is I give them knowledge, though I will tell you this, it is an emotional, psychological response that they are having and not one that can be solved by numbers and data. So that's important, but you still need to have them. And then I circle back and say, so, you know, have I addressed everything you're concerned about? That works. Some don't work for everyone, but it does work.
Have you been vaccinated yet yourself?
No, it hasn't come to my clinic yet, but I will be first in line, assuming that's not considered selfish. So I am eager and willing. I do not want COVID-19. So another thing I do tell people is the vaccine truly is safe and effective. It's been scrutinized so heavily. When have we heard a vaccine so well scrutinized in the public eye? So there's been clear transparency as far as I'm concerned.
Do you guys have the, I know it takes those ultra cold freezers to store this vaccine. Do you guys have those available?
The way the Pfizer vaccine is stored, which is the one that needs ultra cold minus 94 degrees Fahrenheit, is it comes in a box, basically, that is, you know, insulated, and they use dry ice. And so it'll last up to 35 days if you manage it properly in the box. So quite frankly, even if you don't have an ultra low freezer, if you can give out the 975 doses that is one box in 35 days and you have access to dry ice, you actually don't need it. My concern is not all of that. My concern is what you address. We need, the vaccine is useless in the refrigerator, in the freezer, okay? So vaccines don't save lives. Vaccinations save lives.
I want to talk a little bit, Doctor, about setting priorities. You've been on what's called the drafting guidelines work group. It's going to take a while to vaccinate more than 2 million healthcare workers and residents in these care facilities all across California. Who gets the vaccine after that? I mean, what's the thought process that goes into that?
What we're looking at is essential workers. So you asked a very relevant question because there's somewhere between 8 and 11 million essential workers. And we don't have 8 to 11 million doses available for them. So the fundamental framework that we are utilizing to prioritize is the effect on society if they weren't working, their exposure at work, the general concept called equity, and then the effect on the economy. So using those four guidelines as founding principles, we're now looking through the 11 million essential workers and determining who's in tier one, tier two, and so on and so forth. So there should be some information coming out of the governor's office very soon in terms of this.
Yesterday at a ceremony at Kaiser in East Hollywood, Governor Newsom said this about the nurse who had just received the vaccine. Let's hear from him.
We are providing support finally for people like Kim. And Kim made the point, not only for herself, but allowing her to go home and not worry about her family.
So when he said that, I was wondering, I mean, do we know if people who are vaccinated no longer can carry the virus and give it to someone else? You don't have it anymore, but it's not working through you either. Like the people around you are safe as well. That's how a vaccination works, right?
Well, you ask a good question. We don't have clear data that the vaccine actually decreases transmission of the virus, which is essentially what you were asking. So, right, we don't have that. What we're looking at is when we get 50 to 70% of the population, I'm going with 70% of the population vaccinated, then we will get what's called herd immunity. So if you're in a crowd and you are positive, if 70+% of the people around you are immune, it can't spread.
So if you get the vaccine and other people in your household don't have the vaccine, it still masks 6 feet away, stay away from me, all of that.
That's so crucial. Don't think that now you're vaccinated, you can't necessarily spread it. What it'll be is those people in your household, once they're vaccinated, then everyone can take off their mask and everyone can feel good. But yes, that's really, really important. Not until you hear from us do you stop washing your hands, washing your distance, and wearing your mask.
Are you optimistic that the vaccine will last, that the protection won't just wear off in a few months?
So, no, we don't know. But what we will do is we will follow that. So that nurse that got vaccinated yesterday, not necessarily her, but people that get vaccinated, we'll check their antibody levels in 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, 2 years. And if we start to see the vaccine waning and immune effect, then we will have to revaccinate. Think about it, we get vaccinated with the flu every year. So it may turn out that you have to get your COVID-19 vaccine every year. But again, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. We do know that it produces a 94 to 95% immune response. So, you know, ask me in 3 months, ask me in a year, and I'll tell you. But for right now, get the vaccine and just stay tuned, and we'll know how long it lasts.
Deal. We're going to ask you in 3 months. We're going to ask you in a year. We'd love to have you back on to talk about this because we have a lot to talk about, obviously. But I want to thank you for your time, Dr. Oliver T. Brooks, Chief Medical Officer at the Watts Healthcare Corporation. Doctor, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Today's episode has been all about the vaccine, from the rollout to actual shots in the arm. But what about life after the vaccine, after herd immunity and a return to some semblance of normal? Well, the UCLA Anderson forecast expects it to be roaring. We are in the 20s, after all, and not unlike the 1920s following the last deadly pandemic a century ago. The 20s this time around could make for a similar rebound. One of the economists behind that forecast is Lila Bengali. She co-authored the California part of it, and she's with us now. Welcome, Lila.
Thank you very much for having me today.
The economic picture, according to the Anderson report, sounds pretty rosy. What's on the horizon?
Well, so the roaring 20s is certainly a catchy slogan that has caught on. I encourage your listeners to look at our press release for more details, but I'll give you a sense of what we're forecasting. So thinking about California in particular, while we are forecasting robust and relatively quick return of, let's look at an indicator like employment in sectors that tend to have higher incomes, like professional and business services, like the tech sectors in California, there will certainly be some sectors, particularly service-oriented sectors, leisure and hospitality is an example here, that will lag a little bit in terms of how quick the sector is to recover. And that fits with what we're seeing in terms of public health recommendations and consumer behavior. Individuals can't or are more wary about consuming services that are, you know, person-to-person services. So think about nail salons, hair salons, and more willing to and actually have been spending more on goods, things that you can order online where there is very little or no person-to-person contact. So as an example, to put a little bit of information to that, we've seen that consumer spending, or I should say real consumption of goods, has completely returned to pre-pandemic levels. So think about the early part of 2020, and is actually above what we were seeing in the early part of 2020. But real consumption of services, you know, which has implications for individuals who work in service sectors, that consumption of services has not recovered to pre-pandemic levels. And we are forecasting that a return to pre-pandemic levels won't happen for a while. So there's certainly some differential amount of recovery that we're forecasting and expecting to see in the future.
I do want to talk about, you know, the focus on California, and one of the biggest industries here is tourism and hospitality. I mean, Disneyland has been closed, for gosh sakes, for, you know, months and months. Large numbers of unemployment there. They've had layoffs and other places as well that haven't been able to open. Do you expect that to change drastically after the vaccine?
Well, we are forecasting that leisure and hospitality will be one of the sectors that will be slower to recover. And a lot of economic activity and how much that comes back and how quickly will have to do with how quickly consumers feel comfortable going back to consuming more services rather than goods. Something that we've been also talking about amongst the forecast economists is to what extent there is pent-up demand. So is there pent-up demand, or to what extent is there pent-up demand to go on vacation, to go to Disneyland when it reopens, to go to movie theaters, to go to amusement parks, to go to places that have generally more crowds? And I will have to wait and see, I guess, how quickly confidence and comfort levels come back. You know, from studying psychology, there is a literature on habit formation and how long does it take for an action or a set of actions to become a habit. And habits tend to be harder to kick something that's a habit versus just an action or a behavior. So we'll have to see, you know, has behavior that we've seen now, the sort of hesitancy to consume services or to be out in crowds, has that become a very strong habit? Or is there a lot of pent-up demand to go back to life as it was in late 2019, early 2020?
We know what happened at the end of the last roaring 20s, which was a big economic crash followed by the Great Depression. Do you have any concerns that maybe we're headed that way this time around?
Well, a few things come to mind. One is that we have a short-term outlook just out to 2023, which wouldn't be the same time frame as the 20s to the 30s transition. Also, I'm not sure I could say one way or the other whether, 10 years down the road, or I certainly can't say 10 years down the road, whether we're going to have another recession, because in, you know, around this time of that last year, no one was talking about a pandemic, or at least no one that I know of was talking about a pandemic-induced recession in 2020.
Economist Lila Bengali over at the UCLA Anderson Forecast. Lila, thanks for spending some time with us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, a day in the life of a TikTok house. And OMG, it is lucrative AF. But for whom? A dozen or more of the most popular TikTok stars, teenagers with millions of followers, are gathering under one roof to make videos together. That's tomorrow. We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Tell us how you're doing, what your plans are for the holiday. We'd love to hear about what you're doing and subscribe to the podcast as well. kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Sonia Geis, Paul Smith, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Todd, Jody Adler, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all made the show happen today. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your ears and attention. Please stay safe. Stay home as much as you can. Be responsible. And have a great night.